As varied as our topography and soils, as rich as our resources, so varied and rich are the voices and stories of the folks around us. Come neighbor a bit with me, Sam Stroop. Grab a cup of coffee, pull up a comfy chair, let's get to talking. I'm older than dirt, so I have a vivid memory of the Great Flood of 93. It was called the 500-year flood. Once every 500 years, it will be this bad. Well, this year, now a little less than 30 years later, Howard County was hit again. I've been anxious to get Brian Coonsey's take on it all. He and Bill John share the position of emergency managers for Howard County, a part-time job they put a big part of their lives into, as you will discover as you listen to this interview. I did it on November 4th. Two Howard County heroes. Thank them for their service when you see them out and about in the county. So, the Great Flood of 2019.
Yes.
Just to start out, how is it different from 93?
Well, it wasn't quite as bad as 93.
Yeah.
But I think at least we threw emergency management, we kind of had predictions something was going to happen a good little while before it did. You know, we have quarterly meetings with SEMA representatives and people from Weather Service and things like this. And they told us back in February and March that they were seeing numbers of like ground saturation and like snow melted in the northern part of the United States. They didn't know where it went to. So it's got to pop up someplace. So anyway, they told us then they were, since they started keeping the records, and these particular records about runoff back in 2001 or two, something like that, they'd never seen numbers that high before. So anyway, we kind of knew something would come, didn't know how much it was going to be. And it was definitely bad, but it was not as bad as the 93 flood. But I think actually more water got up into New Franklin, the 93 flood, and there was a lot more.
More people living down there.
More people living there. I mean, after the 93 flood, the government did the buyout. A lot of people moved out. And, you know, there was a lot of businesses that moved down, you know, like Missouri Pacific Lumber. Moved down to the bottom, come up here to Fayette. So, anyway.
So the cause of this flood was huge amounts of snow. And then we got heavy rains in May, was it? Do you know what we got here in Howard County for rain? Was it like 20 inches or something, maybe?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I know it was a lot we got here. And, you know, and the rain here, I mean, that we get actually here, I mean, it affects the flash flooding, you know, stuff like that. And in the normal roads go under. But a lot of the stuff from the river, I mean, anything from north here, northwest Missouri, you know, they had those terrible the storms in Nebraska, you know, with all the snow and the flooding that killed all the cattle and, you know, I mean, that runoff into Missouri, you know, and then, you know, the Gavin's Point Dam up in Minnesota. I guess that's where it starts at. Anyway, they were holding back water, but they got to a point where they couldn't hold anymore. And then, you know, then all the lakes above us, Long Branch Lake, different ones, you know, it was highest it's ever been. And they were to the point they couldn't hold water back. They had to let it go. So they were letting water out of that, and you know, it goes, I think, to the Grand River maybe, and then that goes in the Missouri River. And so it was just a combination of so many things, so much, you know, runoff, and you know, there's some possibility, you know, we could have some of the same stuff next year. You know, there's a lot of ground still saturated moisture. We still got winter weather coming. They've had some record snowfalls up north already this year.
The dams are already full.
I think the Corps of Engineers are going to keep the Gavin's Point Dam running pretty good. Last I heard, there were 80,000 cubic feet a second, which is, this time of year, they're usually at 40. But they're trying to run it down, but, you know, which is keeping our river high. The other thing that's going to be bad here, we were able to hold it back for a good long time in Howard County, but then when the levees started breaking, you know, a lot of holes knocked out there, and a lot of those levees haven't been fixed yet. And it's that way all up and down the Missouri River. It's not just Howard County. But anyway, so when the river comes up again, there's not much that, you know, it's nothing there to hold it back like we did originally this spring, you know.
So some levee repairs have been done in Howard County?
I think I understand, and I haven't heard this officially, but some farmers have went out and repaired some on their own. Just being leery of what could come. I would say that the repairs and everything going on with the damage assessments and everything in Howard County this year through FEMA has just been really, really slow. And usually, you know, you have a disaster and, you know, you get people in there pretty quick and it's done. But this was such a long, ongoing thing.
Right.
And then with Howard County and 15 other counties in the state, we couldn't even get to the roads, especially a lot of county roads, because there was water on them. We couldn't get there to see what the damages were.
Right.
And part of Bill and I's job is to, we have to get a damage assessment. We get from Gary Dillon at the Road and Bridge, get from City Fayette, City Glasgow, City New Franklin, and say, you know, how much damage do you have? Rough estimate. Doesn't have to be down to exact penny, but kind of rough estimate, how much damage you have done to your roads or your sewer lagoons or whatever like that. And then we gather all that information, turn it into the state. And so, but anyway, because the water stayed up so long here, we couldn't get in to see what damage was to county roads. And still, when we turned ours in, I want to say in August or September to get our declaration, the county still had two roads underwater. And there was a couple of levees that gave way just off 87 down there. And anyway, it washed some of the county road away, and they couldn't get into it, fix it yet. And anyway, when they went out, when we turned the numbers into FEMA, it went out in a boat and checked, and the water was 22 feet deep where the road used to be at.
Good grief.
So, I mean, you know, and the water still was backing up out of the river. And so the river's going to have to get down a ways before Dylan and those guys can get in there and get it fixed up. And I assume that it's probably still in there. I doubt that they've got it fixed yet. But anyway, we turned in right close to $4 million worth of damage to the county. And what's so unusual, too, is all the other counties through Central Missouri in Region F had all but two of them had flood damage from the Missouri River. But our county had the most dollar-wise out of all the counties, except for, like, I think Cole County had a little bit more, but that included their tornado that hit Jefferson City. But just flood damage, we beat them on that.
Well, if you just read the newspapers, it sounded like they were picking on Howard County and not giving us anything, and they were giving it to everybody else. And that really wasn't what was going on.
We couldn't give numbers to the state until we had numbers to give. The other thing is, this was such a widespread disaster. I mean, all the way from, you know, they were still doing stuff in Nebraska and for FEMA-wise, and then get into SEMA for state emergency management. They were going to bring in, they've got 13 regional coordinators, and then they were bringing in a few other state people to help them go. Well, when so much stuff hit here, they were in Jefferson City because they had people's homes damaged by tornadoes that were misplaced. So they were down. Our coordinator was in Jefferson City going door to door in people's residential area and talking to homeowners there to find out about damages there. And I think it just got to be too big a monster to get their arms around. It just took a while. And like I say, because there's 114 counties in the state of Missouri, and I think all but maybe six or eight has had some kind of disaster declaration.
Wow.
So, and most all have been from flooding. And like I say, there was, you know, this time the state people got around. And even after we got our numbers turned into state and federal people, then, you know, the federal guy has to go through their guidelines. And we just met, was it at the first part of October with FEMA people to do the applicant briefing, which is where the levy districts, the cities and the counties and everybody come in and makes a formal application to FEMA to get reimbursed for damages. So anyway, and that deadline to have those applications in was last week on the 29th. So then it'll start going through the federal paperwork, and they'll send somebody out, and they'll actually go out with, like, Gary Dillon and you know, the folks from New Franklin and Glasgow, and, you know, look at their damages and start putting numbers with actual numbers with damages and stuff.
This became a full-time job for you, didn't it?
It did.
Plus overtime.
Plus overtime, exactly. I think for the first time they actually had to get into the county emergency fund to help pay for our mileage.
Wow.
Anyway,
was roads flooded, no less.
Right, yeah. We had to go a long ways around. But we had, we kind of went out and did some of our own assessment of things, and we had to meet trucks to take water and glass going through the ground, and it just started adding up. Mm-hmm. And there's no way just the normal money we have for mileage. And then they end up had a bunch of required meetings for us this year, just ridiculous.
More mileage.
But yeah, more mileage. So anyway, we're going to be able to claim that money they spent on the emergency fund that paid for our mileage. We just had to keep track of it separate. Yeah. So anyway, we've been paid for those miles. It's just that no telling when the county might get reimbursed from federal people for it. But
yeah,
we keep track of all that stuff for them.
So damage looks like about $4 million. How much actual federal and state money will come back to us of that $4 million to help mitigate these costs?
Well, the federal people will send 80% back reimbursement. The state is looking at doing 10 to 15%. I know they've committed, the state of Missouri has committed a good chunk of money to rebuilding levees. And I don't know if that's in a different fund or what, but anyway, 10 to 15% they usually help fund on it. And then the cities or the counties are responsible for other 10 or 15%. And one good thing is, they can do a lot of in-kind labor. If Dylan them puts, excellent. They have to put 100 tons of rock on the road. Well, they can reimburse for the rock, but then, their trucks that they're hauling it there with, they can count their time for that. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of in-kind labor.
Right.
And the guys that's hauling it. So hopefully the county and the cities won't have to come up with very much cash.
Yeah.
We
won't have to apply a tourniquet.
Right. Hopefully. Hopefully. But like I said, I'm not exactly sure how much the state's part is they put in. They don't always put in some, but I think they're going to. And I do know they put in money for levies this time. There was a special appropriation through the legislature for our levies. We just got the announcement on that a couple weeks ago.
Well, I haven't talked to Dylan or the commissioners, but I remember it wasn't that long ago, late July or something, at home we had 1-inch rain, but the central part of the county got 6 inches.
Right.
And I went over there and was driving some of those roads. I was seeing a friend or something. Mm-hmm. And, oh, my God, the damage.
Oh, they're just terrible.
To the roads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how much time the guys spent regrading roads. They'd blade the gravel up out of the ditch, and they'd come rain the next week, and they'd have to go back and do it all over again. But
and that probably doesn't even fall in this $4 million.
If it falls between June, or was it May 23rd, May, the end of May, there was a date where they actually declared the disaster between there and July 2nd.
Okay.
And the disaster was ongoing until the river goes below flood stage, stays below flood stage for 2 days.
Mm.
So
maybe it fell in.
So then what it stops at after July 2nd, the problem with that is, Dylan and those guys have been able to get back in and fix some of the roads. But when the river comes back up, like it did a couple of weeks ago, that's not included in that disaster period. If they put 30 tons of rock on a road and 20 of it washed down the river again, the replacing that 20 tons, that's going to come back to the county.
Yeah,
because it's not happening in the period of time for the disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And until they get some of the levees back, I'd say that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, several places. I mean, the river can get up, maybe not enough to have a disaster again, but.
Was there the forces going on? I don't think there was, but I want to ask, that created the big holes in the bottom land that existed after the 93 flood?
Yeah, there were some places, and we heard all kinds of stories, but one place there was where a levee blew out, there was it ended up being like a 1,500 feet wide space in the levee, but it's like we've heard from anywhere to 30 to 50 feet deep hole where the water runs through there, cut it out. And some of them, if you go downhill in Glasgow, it looks straight down into Saline County.
Right.
There's a big hole up there where that levee blew out, and my opinion, and I think, you know, and I've heard this from several folks, is that's just too big a hole. They're not going to be able to fill that large hole back in, so they're going to have to build a levee out around that hole and come back. And so there will always be like a little lake there. It's, I can't remember, I had a friend of mine who lives in Glasgow, said they were out on a boat in the river and went over where the levee was at. It was 5 feet deep, the water was over the levee. But then they got out into that farmer's field over there, and it was 20 some feet deep. It can't get from there back to the river. You know, and I don't know. I mean, that would be a tremendous amount of pumping. I don't know if they could.
Well, I remember Dylan, we were driving one day, and he said, see that spot there? That was a 90-foot deep hole after the flood of 93. Mm-hmm. I said, is it still 90 foot deep? He said, no, that's where we dumped all the sand that was in the field.
Right, yeah. Well, see, that's another thing, too. I mean, the $4 million, I mean, that's just for
fixing levees and roads.
Government entities.
Yeah.
That's not the levee districts. Mm-hmm. That's not, that's the cities.
Wow.
And counties, stuff like that. It didn't include the Katy Trail, but the big thing that they're not looking at on that number is the damage to farmers' fields.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of sand in them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I know that in 93, they turned a lot of it under, a lot of sand, but, you know, so what are they going to do with this? Because if they go turn it up, you know, the sand from 93 is down there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know, but there's a tremendous amount of loss with farm ground here, and I don't know what they're going to be able to do to correct any of that. I know that USDA's got some programs to help get their fields back, but you know, I don't know how well they work.
Right.
Hopefully, they work good.
So, I think you just answered the question I was going to throw at: is this affecting the value of the land price-wise if they were to sell it? And it is.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what it's going to do like for the tax base of the county, because you know we've lost some businesses. And we've lost, you know, some farm ground is not as productive as it was. So, you know, you know, the valuation for the property so much and it's not worth that much now, then that's got to affect our tax base.
So we lost Snotty's store. What other businesses would you be referring to?
Well, I mean, the Grow Johns, they're going back in. And Snotty's, we're not sure about.
I see.
I've heard both ways. Mm-hmm. One is they're not going to go back in because they're both old enough to retire. I mean, Chris, the oldest one now, he's older than I am by a couple of years. But I'm not sure what they're going to do, but they're not back in business yet.
Right.
Grow Johns is opened up at the old state shed over Boonesboro. So he's going to work there, but, you know, he doesn't want to move back down there until the levees get fixed.
Right.
Barnes,
and just his new location is not ideal.
No, it's off the beaten path.
Yeah. Right.
But Barnes's, I'm not sure. I mean, they're off the record. They're wanting to buy out, you know. And the bed and breakfast down River Seat. But they weren't a bed and breakfast anymore.
Okay.
But they did have some insurance, but it wasn't going to cover, you know, their damages.
How many residences do you think were inundated and probably now be vacated? Probably a half dozen is all those.
Yeah, there was only, I think, a total of 10 or 12 that actually got water up, you know, like in the yard, stuff like that, and probably another half a dozen or so that actually got water in them. I mean, some of them actually had water come up, stood in them. In New Franklin, there was a lot of water that backed up through the sewer system and got into people's homes.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'd say probably a dozen or so total.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, there's a difference too. And I never thought about that because there's several different kinds of assistance you get from federal government through FEMA for floods. The first one is called IA and stands for individual assistance. That is for people that have a home that's actually, their water actually has to be in their home, create damage, and then they can come and possibly be eligible for individual assistance. The government will give them money to help get the house fixed up and or whatever. We were very fortunate because we only had just, like I said, less than a dozen homes were affected. And several of those were just water in the yard. Maybe got their air conditioner units and, you know, storage sheds, but it didn't actually get up into the house. So we're fortunate for that. So it was kind of a double-edged sword because we were fortunate we had very few homes that did not get water in them, but since we didn't have enough damage-wise, to meet the criteria for FEMA, then the people that did get it weren't eligible to get any help. But now we actually had right at 70 homes that were affected by the flood, but they were along the river, like County Road 317 and some of those over there, Route Z. The water was over the road, so they couldn't get home the normal way. And some people used boats, get in and out. And then some of them drove, they were on the east side of Route Z, north and the east side.
Right.
And so they were able to go out through their neighbors.
Okay.
Go through their farm and then go to the neighbor's farm, come out on Highway 87. So although a lot of people were affected and affected by that, the water didn't get in their homes.
Right.
So that was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then also because we didn't meet individual assistance, we didn't have enough businesses that were damaged to qualify for any grants to help the businesses get back. And that's really a big bite.
Mm-hmm.
But Boone County had enough damage. Then we were a contiguous county to Boone County. We were able to get on and the businesses could get a small business loan. And it's a low interest loan, like 2%, and they can put it on for 20, 30 years, whatever they want.
Wonderful.
But the only thing it's for is their lost income over that period of time while they were flooded out. So that's, it's not that great a program to help out the businesses.
Right.
So the businesses kind of fell between the cracks, unfortunately, because like I said, SBA, and most of those guys, I'm sure that they lost a lot of income while they were closed, but still,
they're old businesses.
They're established businesses, and they got don't really want to go out and borrow money for 20 years on what you missed out on here.
Yeah.
And so anyway, those are two different kinds of help: individual assistance, the small business thing.
Okay.
Neither one of them panned out very well for the county. Mm-hmm. Then the other one is called PA for public assistance. That's for public entities. That's the cities, the county, the levy districts. The Katy Trail, it was owned by the state of Missouri, stuff like that, then that's where the $4 million come in.
Okay.
And to get public assistance, first of all, the state has to have $9 million worth of damage statewide. That's a criteria set up by FEMA. So if we get to $9 million statewide, and then the way they figured you have to have, they figure the threshold for each county is $3.40 per person based on your last census that you had. So our county's last census was 10,000 and some odd people. So we had to have $34,000 worth of damage to stuff before we would be eligible to get a federal declaration, and which was no problem. But like I said, but it's all based on population. Like we had to have 34,000. Cooper County had to have $60,000-$70,000, because their population's more.
Yeah,
but anyway, we had no problem getting to 34,000, and really the Katy Trail's part of the state, but anyway, it could count towards our damage assessments, and they come up $340,000 worth of damage to the trail, and that's not included in the $4 million that we turned in.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway,
yeah.
Glasgow, their big thing that got hit over there was their sewer lagoon. And when the water got up in it, well, then a lot of the sand and stuff silted in there, so it filled it up. So they're going to have it dug out. So
that's, again,
yeah. So I mean, that's just huge, huge amount of money to do.
Right.
And hopefully, at some point in time, there's mitigation money. There always is mitigation funding available after disaster. And it would be nice if they could get Glasgow's moved, and New Franklin's is in the flood zone too, and fortunately they didn't get a whole lot silted in. It knocked down some fence around their lagoons and stuff like that, but wasn't near as much damage as what Glasgow had. But why DNR and different people like that tell these people they have to put in new sewer system, why they haven't put it right down next to Missouri River is just beyond me.
Yeah.
Because good Lord is going to put water up there sometime.
Right.
And
it's tough because it's hard to find a good spot in Glasgow as an alternative.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be uphill.
Right, exactly. And you've got to get your treated water. It has to have some place to go, back out to the river. So I understand. I mean, that is the best place to put it in.
But it's also the worst.
Yeah, I say, and when the river gets up, it's the worst place to have it. But anyway, it's just.
Well, I'll ask the dirty little question. How's Glasgow handling their sewage now then?
Well, I mean, it's working. It's working.
Just a lot of sand in it.
But just a lot of sand in it. So, okay. I mean, it cut the life of the lagoon down,
yeah.
I'd say, by quite a lot. So,
yeah, okay.
And that's not a fun project to get into either. I mean, because, you know, the Fayette had to have theirs dug out several years ago, and that's a heck of a project to clean that out.
So, going back to the farmers that got no crop in, or their crop was in and then it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of assistance did a lot of them have? Some kind of a crop insurance? Do you think?
I would say most all of them would have some crop insurance. You know that. You know, I know some guys along creeks up around Fayette here. You know that were able to use their crop insurance to pay for when the Bond family, Montauk Creek, like that got out. And I'm sure they've got the same thing in River Bottom. Now, the FSA has programs to help them with things. I know getting their fields back in shape and things like that. But I really don't know what they are.
Yeah.
They just said we've got some programs, and we had farmers call and ask. We said contact the FSA office, and they'll tell you what they've got.
I probably need to talk to FSA because you don't have a number on how many crop acres might have been affected.
No, huh?
Yeah.
No.
A lot,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's my official answer, a lot.
Right. Yeah.
And so funny, because you drive down Z Route someplace, and you know, when we took the FEMA people down there, there was some darn nice cordon right along the road, one place, but you just look over just a little ways from it, and there wasn't a thing standing, because, you know, where the water come up, or maybe right next to the road, the water was over the road here, but on down the road, nice corn crop again.
But the only one I know personally would have been Kircher.
Right.
And he had a beautiful crop coming, I think. And
right.
Just like that.
Yeah, just wiped it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Tragic. Very tragic.
Like I say, though, those bottoms are a great place to raise crops, but whenever the floods hit, you're just in trouble.
What was the workload like for you and Bill during this time frame?
We were really busy. I mean, you know, when actually the levee started breaking, and I can't remember, it was the first weekend of June. We were down here a lot of hours, and you know, my wife come in and helped do press releases. They had the girls extra from across the hall here at 911. They helped us out some, and it was a lot. That one Saturday, we were called on Friday night by KCP&L that said we're getting ready to cut the power to the water wells in Glasgow, so they're going to be without water. So Bill got on the phone, called his team, and said, we need to do something for the people of Glasgow. And so they said, well, we called back and said, we got two tractor trailer loads of water coming. So they could find a way to Glasgow, but, you know, they need to get it to where it was going to be delivered at and set up the distribution places. Well, it ended up a levee broke that night north of Glasgow, so the water didn't end up coming up as high as they thought it was going to. So they never actually lost power there. But anyway, that Saturday morning, I had to go meet the two trucks from Convoy Hope, and they got them to Glasgow, and they were taking the water out. And my brother works at MoDOT, and he said, well, the water was coming over down there pretty good. Anyway, then we got called that the levee broke there at Z87, and we were afraid it was going to go in the Old Franklin, flood those areas out. So we, you know, we were trying to hustle around here and get evacuations notices out. We get them to the sheriff's department, the fire department, the New Franklin police. They were doing their thing down there, and trying to get, telling those people they need to get out. You know, trying to get shelters figured up. And we had a lot of people left their homes and went to shelters just because they couldn't get to their homes, even though the water didn't get in their home. But Red Cross is always, you know, they got shelters set up here, but they already had one set up in Boonville, and they said, well, that's kind of close. They just tell people to come to Boonville. Well, that was an inconvenience. Yeah. And we did have a few people stayed at Central Methodist College here. But, you know, so anyway, it was kind of funny, but trying to get something with a shelter set up. And the other thing, and one thing they taught us at an emergency management class one time is that your second disaster is donations. Because people are wanting to send in food and water and I mean, clothes. We didn't need clothes here, but people were wanting to bring clothes in. Yeah. I said, no, I'm sorry, thank you. And it's great to think that the people around the area want to care about you and love you enough to send you help. But, you know, people would just call up and say, wait, you know, I've got enough hot food for 25 people. Well, where are we going to go with it? You know, well, yeah. Where's the guy sandbagging? Well, you know, trying to tell people how to get down over to Petersburg and Lisbon area and stuff like that and get there safely. Yeah. You know, it was quite a challenge. But when the levee broke, we were really swamped in here. And like I say, I'm not always computer savvy. So my wife, she was in the next room, and I said, I need a press release. And I scratched it out on a yellow legal pad and said, here, this is what I needed to say, put it on Howard County EMA stationery. So she sat there and typed it all up. And getting the word out, you know, to people to move, that was a big issue. I really wish the county had enough money to go in and do a NICSL system. And it's like a deal where it was to be set up here in our office or even the 911 office, and you could draw on there, you know, say all these homes within this area, you'd have their phone numbers and would dial their cell phones, text their cell phones, call their landlines. You know, a lot of older people don't have cell, or they got landlines yet. And you could send all that to them, and you could just get on and say, hey, all you people need to evacuate. If you live on this county road or this state highway, you need to evacuate within the next 2 hours.
Right.
And that would really be nice, because we actually had to have policemen and some firemen. And, you know, your volunteer firemen, it's a Saturday afternoon. You know, a lot of those guys are out, you know, they're doing things with their families, kids, you know, and trying to get people there to help out. It just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's you know, a couple deputies on, and, you know, Mike Neal come out. But still, you're trying to get to, you know, 100 and some houses.
Yeah.
It takes you a while.
Yeah. What might a system like that cost?
It's just 100,000? No, it's a little over 5,000 a year.
Okay.
But it's every year.
Yeah.
And we were going to check to see if, you know, some of the funds that the county gets from the state, EMPG money, would help pay. A lot of times they'll pay for half of our expenses in here. So, well, if they pay half of it, then we don't have to come up with, you know, maybe $2,500 or so at the county. And then if enough people went together, because the city's got it, but they've just got the city pay it does, and they've just got a small version where they can send out like a boiler order and stuff like this. But this would actually be that you could call people, text people, call them on their landlines. And you could put a deal in it, like if the National Weather Service issues a flood warning.
Right.
Then it you know, I don't even have to be in the office.
Right.
It whenever it hits here, that warning, it goes out to everybody that's on that system. Mm-hmm. And pretty well every county in Region F has got it, everybody but us.
Huh. So it could really be helpful with tornado warnings.
Oh, yeah, tornado warnings, any kind. I mean, you know, Mike Neal's got a missing person.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a child abduction, or any kind of weather.
Or somebody power running around with a machine gun.
Right, yeah. Anything like that, you know, they could get it. And we've got a little system here that they've got in 911 that gets messages out that way to the firemen and policemen and ambulance people. And I think to the schools also they've excluded. But still, it needs to be where just the general public can get messages to them, you know. And like I say, everybody Round seemed to have one, and but like I say, when I priced it, and I know you sit up there, you know what's going to happen. Walk in and ask your $5,500. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah,
we're going to see if the state would pick up half the tab on it. That would be huge.
I got a feeling the levies kind of went like dominoes. Probably Aholt Bottoms and Sheridan County went first.
You know, I honestly know there's some up north went first, because that give us a little reprieve down here.
And then Saline County across the Glasgow Bridge went.
Right.
And then what happened next? It was a little while for...
Yeah, then it came on down. And actually, it was starting to come over by just above Petersburg a little bit one evening.
Okay.
And they said, you know, by midnight, 1 o'clock, it's going to be over.
Okay.
Next morning, it was down a little ways, about 6-8 inches. Hey, we're doing all right, but they lost 11... I don't know, the Aholts or the one in Saline County, because it kind of did that a couple times, fluctuated.
Yeah.
Anyway, when they it finally, those places filled up, and then it just come on down. And I don't think it ever actually went over where those guys worked at there in Petersburg. It just kind of went out around them and then come back in. Mm-hmm. And where it blew out there at 87 and Z route, that was a big one. Then there was another one back up west, north and west of that one. And I'm not sure where... Where it was at that broke, it was a
lot of it, even though it was really close to the top, the levees just got tired and gave out.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. It wasn't so much that it washed over the top.
Right, yeah, it was just so weak because we'd had so much rain here. It was just so just wet.
Soggy, and they're gone.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times there's groundhog holes in there. You know, the guys, the farmers are down there with sandbags and like that, trying to patch holes where the groundhogs had dug in.
Yeah.
And you know, the water was coming through them.
Mm-hmm.
And some places, most places they saved them. But
now you were still working with the Fayette Police back in 93, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
So all of this work that you're doing now, was it being done by just like the county commission and, and Dillon?
Yeah, it was, because they didn't, they'd had a what they call it, a civil defense director.
Okay.
Just before that, and then he, because of health reasons, had to quit. And so they didn't actually have anybody in during the 93 flood. And then shortly, it was the fall of 93 or sometime 94, when Bob Lang was hired. And he did that until 2000, when did Bill and I start? We started in 2008 or 2006, something like that. When did the tornado come through your place?
2006.
Six, okay. Because that was in March, and Bill and I started in January.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Bob Lang. Okay. Did it from 93 or 94 up until then, 2006.
Now, when did you join as emergency management?
In January 2006.
Okay.
Now, see, I was doing it for the city as part of my job as police chief.
Okay.
But then when Bob Lang was going to retire from down here, then Bill and I decided, you know, that would be a good little part-time job for us to take on, because we were in town working anyway, and then it'd be good for whenever we retire too. And anyway, like I said, we started in January of 06, that big tornado that hit the county. You know, that was in March 2006, so we'd only been on a couple months.
But,
and that's one thing people kind of forget, because, you know, like when the tornado hit in 2006, you know, the county assessor was out the next morning, and I went with him, and we went around and was looking at different people's farms, say, okay, this is where it went through, and it destroyed this barn near that house. You know, kind of the path through the county.
Right.
Called up SEMA, said, hey, this is what's going on. Within, I don't know, it didn't seem like that long. Within a week, maybe two, the people from SEMA and FEMA were here going through and going around each individual's farm or home to see what the damage was. And this, I mean, the damage was going on, started way back in May, in June, and people from FEMA didn't show up till I want to say it was in September sometime. And like I say, it just, part of it was because
they were overwhelmed.
Yeah, you know, they were overwhelmed, and the other part is we couldn't give them initial numbers to even come here. And you know, they kind of have to see some of your stuff.
Right.
And I mean, so many people try to take advantage of them. That, you know, and anyway, so they've got to come out and see some damages. You've got to have pictures, if you know, and things, you know, like before they got here, their water was also on the roads. Well, you just can't leave the road unopened until FEMA people start to get here. So, you know, the Dillon and Dana from clerk's office, they went out and they took the heck out of pictures and then documented, you know, County Road 312, you know, we hauled 100 tons of rock and had to put a new pipe in, but then they keep those actual calls separate. And so they kept track of that. So when FEMA come in, I said, you know, we had to get this road open. But, yeah, and they went through and listed all these, but then there's, like I say, the ones that would still have water on them when FEMA was here. And I don't know, there was a, and I've never been on looked at it, but supposedly over by Rich and Church, that railroad over there, that big bank slid off.
Again?
You know, going into the creek over there.
Wow.
And Dillon got a price to redo that. It was it was Boone Quarries or somebody.
Okay.
Out of Columbia. I think it's a bigger job than he could tackle, but it was over $300,000.
Oh, yeah, and the work they put into that, and it looked wonderful.
Yeah.
But it wasn't good enough.
Right, right. Say, the good Lord wants to take it out, he's going to take it out.
Well, it's the kind of dirt over there that is prone to water slides.
Right, right, yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly.
Not like my good old clay up there.
Right, yeah.
Water goes over the top, but
right.
Underneath it stays put.
Right, yeah.
What a mess, $300,000.
Yeah. Oof.
So is that road closed now still?
You know, I honestly don't know.
Okay.
I, I, I don't know that they, honestly, yeah. don't know what they've done with it.
And it might be that it's just right up to the edge.
Yeah, yeah. I don't, I don't know. Surely if it was, it wouldn't have been closed this long.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's any other way for those people to get in and out over there. No. I can't, is it, what is it, 316?
Well, a long ways around, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a mess. You know, I think it was only 3 weeks ago when that big railroad bridge went out. But
yeah.
Brunswick.
Yeah.
Did you see the?
Yeah, I saw the video.
Video that was of that thing.
I was
wow.
I wouldn't want to miss standing as close to it as some of those guys was.
That's better than anything you see in the movies.
Yeah, that's right. They said they actually cut some of that track because they were afraid it was going to tear back from what
go
it is.
Further.
So they
okay.
actually took
yeah.
something and cut the rails and stuff. So whenever right. it did go, it would just take the rest with it.
Now I know I heard this, but when I heard it, I said. Some reporter got wrong. Something about how the river was up 20 foot a crowder. That is impossible.
No,
at the same time, you see that pile of logs, and you think, well, maybe it was up 20
yeah.
foot.
Yeah, they said it was a heck of a backup up there.
Oh,
and you know the Coast Guard they put a travel warning from the Missouri River
huh?
because all that brush once it comes through up there.
Yeah.
You know it was going. Eventually end up down the Missouri River, so they put a travel warning out for that. So
now my wife, we always hear things different,
mm-hmm.
and then we fight.
Yeah,
and then I back up and I say, "I know you're right, dear.
Right. That's right."
But she said that bridge is open again. She'd heard that.
I don't see how that's possible. I know they're working like crazy on it. I saw pictures of cranes on barges up there working.
Okay.
Now, whether it's open or not, I don't know. I have not heard that it's open, but I do know they're working like crazy.
Right.
And they were supposed to get it back open. They hope fairly quick because, you know, there's a lot of grain and stuff like that that's being backed up because of that being out. But it's been 2 weeks ago I saw pictures of cranes on barges, and they were working like crazy. They said they were trying to get it back in as quick as they could.
Well, what a mess when you have to route all that around.
Oh, yeah. What are you talking about?
I live just a little ways from the railroad track, from out of Armstrong.
Yeah.
And I was hearing, I think, twice as many trains.
Oh, yeah. Well, they said some of the guys living in Glasgow told me that there have been more trains coming through Glasgow now.
And it was a different sounding horn that they'd be blowing when they came to Steinmetz because they always blow it for Steinmetz.
Right.
Yeah, that's not the normal train.
Right. You know, it's so funny. You know where I live out there on
yeah.
Ira, and I can hear that dang train in my house when it's blowing the whistle.
Wow.
And that's, as crows fly, that's probably, what, eight, 9 miles?
Yeah.
Maybe not that much, but it's several miles. But when the weather's just right and you're not, you know, a lot of other noise around, cars coming up down the road, whatever. Mm-hmm. I can stand in my barn or in my yard and I can hear that dang train just blowing up there.
And I'm up a lot during the night. And normally it's about every 2 hours this train goes through
on
that track. It's a lot heavier at night than during the day.
Yeah.
And now it's even more.
Even more so, yeah. Just what you needed.
Doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah. Well, I guess, if you're up there.
In fact, I always, when I hear the train, I always say out loud, well, there goes the other hard-working Howard Countyan.
Right, yeah. That's right, one more.
And, of course, I label myself as the other one.
Right, exactly.
So we're buddies.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. What is the difference between FEMA and SEMA? One state and one's federal.
Right.
What's the difference?
They do a lot of the same thing that all, the state, like say, just run out of the Jefferson City is the director's appointed by the governor, and FEMA they're just kind of responsible for the whole United States, and FEMA's where all the money comes from.
Okay,
the state of Missouri puts in a lot of money into SEMA, but a lot of their stuff comes from FEMA. I mean, like the money just for Bill and I just to keep the lights on in this office, the $13,000 whatever year we get that. That comes from FEMA, it's passed through SEMA than to us. So it's got, they attach federal rules and state rules and then before it ever gets to us. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so FEMA's one of the big purse strings.
Okay.
And for money, it's SEMA's a pass-through agency. But I mean, but they do a lot of things. They're a lot into planning. SEMA is, they plan for flooding and earthquakes, the earthquake deal. They've got somebody planning on that grab all the time. In case something happens, a New Bradford fall.
So a lot of your training comes through SEMA?
Right.
I would guess that.
Right, yeah.
Case.
Yeah, and they're requiring so much more of Bill and I now than what we did when we first started. And a lot of the classes we had because of our administrative positions with the police department. But now they've started tacking on a few other classes, so we're having to take those so the county can keep getting their money. The last thing they come up with was this cybersecurity thing. Mm-hmm. And we had to take some training for that and answer questions of how cyber secure our county was by the end of November, or else we didn't get our money through here. So, I mean, they always attach money to
training
everything. But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we do a lot of exercises. We do ice storms, winter storms. We have to do a couple a year through our region. And, you know, we've done, the winter storm, ice storm, tornadoes, flooding, New Madrid fall, because if something happens to New Madrid, there the state's plan is, you know, to move, they're going to move people out from down there because it's not going to be home fit to live in. Well, some of them will be going through the central part of the state. So, you know, we're kind of like a host area through our region, you know, to get those people through to other parts of the state. The Callaway plant, you know, we're part of an exercise down there every 5 years because if they have a meltdown at their plant, just about everything in Howard County from Fayette East is in where some of the radiological dust could be at. Mm. So anyway, so we're part of that.
Could New Madrid affect the I-70 bridge at Roachport?
It depends. It could affect it. Yeah. I mean, but
we don't know.
Right. It's an older bridge, and it just depends on how strong it is down there, and it kind of follows up. Sometimes they say it kind of followed up wrong towards river areas, you know, just because of the type of sand around that's around there. Mm-hmm. But it could. They make plans to decide, you know, whether what happens if the I-70 bridge is out in St. Charles, or what happens if the one's out in Roachport. Now, that was part of the drill we had. We were going to have this year because they were talking about repairing I-70 bridge. And, you know, the official state route was going to be down 65 to Sedalia, across 50 to Jeff City, then back up 63 to Columbia.
Everybody's going to take 40.
Everybody's going to take Highway 40. Who in the hell is going to drive around down that way? So anyway, part of our planning
time for a lemonade stand,
right? Exactly. but part of our planning this year was, until we found out that they were going to do the bridge replacement, which they're still going to do a few little repairs on the current one, but they're not going to have to close it down like they planned on. But was the discussion between us and Cooper County, you know, how we're going to handle all the traffic coming through, how it's going to affect us up here.
So Christmas is coming. What would be on your list of things you'd like to see Santa Claus bring you for emergency management personnel?
My Nixle system, so I can notify the public better.
Huh. And what do you call that again?
Nixle, N-I-X-E-L or L-E.
Okay.
L-E, I think.
So you see that as a top priority?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, most everybody gets smartphones. And, you know, if you get a weather alert, I mean, most all of us get dinged from the weather, or, you know, Channel 8 or Channel 17, somebody. But we need something we can do local here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that they're going to automatically get the weather alerts. But, you know, like when that levee broke, never even thought about it, but the weather service called, said, "You got a levee broke?" Said, "Yeah." I said, "You want to put out a flood warning?" "Oh, heck yes."
Mm.
So anyway, then the weather service put out a flood warning because of the fast running water coming out and inundating the area.
Yeah.
But, you know, so my phone was dinging for weather alert, but it was coming out of Pleasant Hill. But when we were trying that Saturday afternoon to try to gather enough policemen and firemen together on a Saturday afternoon to go out and tell people to move,
that's a
pain. It just takes a long time for them to get around. It's hard, you know. So you try to divide up 100 houses between, you know, 5-6 people.
Right.
In town, you can kind of walk door to door.
Right.
But people's always got questions. Yep. You know, you just can't walk up and say, "Sam, you're leaving your house within 2 hours." You're going to say, "Why do I have to leave? Where am I going to go?
Right.
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, what do I need to take with me?" So they're going to have questions. So it would just be so nice to be able to put that out. And, like, it could be used for so many other things. Like, say, Brother Mike's got, you know, he could have an escaped convict. He could have a missing child.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Yeah.
You know. So that would be, if Santa was going to come to my office this year, that's what I wish he'd bring.
I'll whisper that in the commissioner's ear.
Well, I'm fixing to.
I think think they'll be receptive.
Yeah.
If it came out of the blue, maybe not. But right. after this event,
right.
it should help.
Right. Well, like I say, I'm hoping if the state will pay half of the bill, yeah. then that won't make it quite so bad yeah. for us.
Is there anything new you learned from this situation that, aha, I'll remember that next time?
Probably as far as in the office here, sometime we could use a little more help in here. And like I say, and I actually have people volunteer, but it's just people, you know, when you're in the middle of it, you didn't think about it.
Right.
Jim Steele said a couple of days later, he's got an office over there, and he come in and said, you know, I said, you need help getting press releases and stuff. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll be glad to come up and do that for you. Never thought about Jim. Perfect one.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, and you know, we need a public information officer, which we were doing it.
Mm.
But then, you know, we've got a list over here someplace.
Right.
Right there of all the news medias.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got to get a hold of them. But, you know, we learn, like I said, we need to spread out. Like I said, get some into that office there.
Get some people that know what's going on.
Right.
Be able to help.
Right. And just a little bit more coordinated. And was.
Did you feel a lot of weight of responsibility during this event?
Oh, absolutely.
It's heavy on you.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I'd say, you know, it's the first time I've ever been to the commissioners asking for them to declare a state of emergency.
Right.
Never done that in Howard County before. Mm-hmm. I mean, so, yeah, and you know, you're worried because you've got all the volunteers out there. They're farmers, they're their friends,
yep.
family. You're worried about, you know, what happens if they get out on a levee and they're working, and the levee blows out and they can't get back to you, mm-hmm. or you can't get out to save them. You worry about the elderly or disabled people, you know, where you're going to go. Probably sheltering was, like I said earlier, was a big issue. And I will say that the Ministerial Alliance was very helpful in town, because when we needed something quick, they said, okay, we'll pay for how many rooms mm-hmm. you need at Silver Bell. And that'll get you for a couple nights apiece.
Right.
And then after you do that, then because Red Cross, you know, it's easy to say you're going to set up a Red Cross shelter. It don't happen overnight. Yeah. We've got phone calls we made to those people back in June and still haven't been returned to us. But we're fortunate. We're friends with a guy that does Red Cross stuff in Cooper mm-hmm. County. And he's the one that said, hey, I've already got a shelter open up down here. Yeah. At the Open Praise mm-hmm. Bible Center on 87. He said, send your people down here. Now it was a little right. long ways around. But they had 13 people from Howard County spent several days over there.
Hmm.
But the Ministerial Alliance here, and you know, Central Methodist opened up their mm-hmm. some of their dorms, you know, the old Mary student housing, and there people put up there. But anyway, the Ministerial Alliance was just great, and they just told the guys that if Brian or Bill calls and says Sam needs a room, then it's okay. But you know, so we didn't have to call them,
right.
you know, during the night and say, can we get somebody a room?
Mm-hmm.
They said, we'll pay whatever's needed. Up to two nights, so that was really handy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then, and it, you know, this come after the New Orleans Hurricane Katrina down there, people's pets. You know, a lot of people leave down there. So what am I going to do with my pets? Because you know, you going to put them someplace, and what if the shelter doesn't take pets? And what do you do with them?
Yeah.
So we had a couple issues like that, and we finally were able to get them to take them to friends,
mm-hmm.
something like that, and then Kim Thompson. Was with Paws, you know, right. We called her and she agreed that her and a couple of friends in her group would take some animals if they need to. But that was still another little issue we had to work through. And, you know, you don't think a lot about it till you have a pet. Mm-hmm. And then you tell you, if you go someplace and you can't bring your little dog along, well, you know, what the heck? Mm-hmm. I don't want to go there then. So.
Well, you were really dealing with a small number of people compared to what some disasters could be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What kind of disasters do you wake up in the middle of the night and think, oh, my God, am I ready for this one if it comes?
Oh, probably ice storms where the power's out. You know, we got a lot of power lines and trees down where the power's going to be out in the county for an extended period. You know, we've tried to work for several years on getting shelters up and stuff like that, and we've got some good shelters in the area. But if they don't have power, then we don't have good way to hook generators up to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But at least we've got all the fire stations hooked up now. Something like that. And then the other thing, too, is getting the people to understand they need to be prepared to stay in their homes for several days. Because, honestly, if there's an inch of ice out on the ground and there's tree limbs and power lines down, it's Mrs. Smith, who's 80 years old and got problems walking around, is she better off trying to put her on a bus out on a slick road getting her to the shelter someplace, or she better off stay right at home.
Yeah.
She better off stay right at home.
So to get people to think in terms of, have I got plenty of candles?
Right, take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And you know, they can't expect the government, whether it's the local government here or a state or anybody else, to come in and take care of them. And when they say you need to be prepared to take care of yourself for 72 hours, they're serious. Mm-hmm. And like I say, well, the Red Cross, when we talked about setting up a shelter here, we went through many, many phone calls before we ever got to talk to anybody about it. Mm-hmm. And then we finally got to say, well, I'll call you back tomorrow on it and let you know what we can get set up. It never happened. Wow. And Red Cross is a good organization. Yeah. I think they're overwhelmed too. But like I said, we talked to this guy over at Cooper County. He said, oh, mine's already set up. I'll take care of it. Because he had it set up for Cooper County people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, people really need to be prepared to take care of themselves. And we just don't have enough personnel to get people shuttled around real easy either, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you know, we had that real bad snowstorm, was it 5-6 years ago, 20-some-inch snow, and the power was out all through the county. And we opened up a little shelter down here in the Keller Building over on the south wing over there. And one lady come in, and she had to fight her way in a four-wheel drive pickup to get to town.
Yeah.
But nobody else could get here. And, you know, I really didn't mind putting up a spot for her, but I'm not too sure she wouldn't have been just well off, because she had to leave the next morning to go back home and take care of her animals. So maybe just well off to stay there.
Well, you were kind of through the fire again this time. Mm-hmm. And your word was that it could happen again, some serious flooding this next year.
Right.
Unless we have a good drought come along.
Right, yeah. You know, like Missouri, have a drought. Take your poison. That's right, yeah. Yeah, you bet.
You, when I think of you and your brother David, I think of these are the two guys in the county, and there's tons more, but your willingness to step forward and serve the county and do the dirty work.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the fire department and the police department, now emergency management. Did you just kind of fall into this side of your life, or was this a pattern your dad set, or
no,
what?
No, well, my mom and dad always told me, you know, I need to do things for other people. They were really good about looking after their neighbors.
Hmm.
They had a lot of elderly neighbors who were kids, and they'd share garden things with them and stuff like that. But I always wanted to be a policeman. And then I kind of, you know, see the whole fire truck go through town. I thought, well, that's really neat. And anyway, I actually got on the fire department first.
Hmm.
And, you know, you just get a satisfaction out of being able to help people. And sometimes things aren't very nice, you know, but people have to go through their homes burned down or whatever, but, you know, and, you know, people lose their lives and things, but, and those aren't pleasant days, but, you know, you like to do whatever you can to help people out. And you know, that's just kind of a thing that, like I say, our folks taught us to try to do things to help people less fortunate. And of course, you know, it's what they teach us in church too, you know, to try to do things to help other people, and that's what God wants us to do. So try to help out. And like I said, we don't always do it right, but you know, we just do the best we can with it.
The thing I also see in your life is you're very capable of working with other people.
Yeah, you have to be able to, yeah.
Somehow getting them to do the things that need to be done.
Right.
And hats off to you.
Well, thank you.
And I'm sure that's developed over the years,
too. Oh, it has.
Through making mistakes and figuring things out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I mean, that's just the way most of the things I learned is from making a mistake. It's how, boy, don't want to do that again.
Right. Well, thanks so much for spending this time with me.
I'm glad to do it. Thanks for coming in.
A lot of folks in Fayette and near surroundings are going to enjoy hearing all this.
Yeah, well, that's good.
So thank you very much.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed this session of Let's Get to Talkin', encourage friends out of the range of our low-power station to catch us online. Just Google Sam Stroop, SoundCloud, and the newest and oldest sessions will pop up. If you, like me, have a long day of being focused on my work and life, it's a great day's end to get my mind bent a bit around the life beat of the folks around me. This is Sam Stroop. Catch you next week. Let's Get to Talkin'.